Hello, this is Daniel Jalkut.
And this is Manton Reese.
And this is Core Intuition, Uncomfortably Similar. Well, Manton, we are fresh out of the friendly embrace of Apple's keynote live stream, which I have to say was totally reliable. It had a couple little minor little time hiccups. I think it was, I ended up like maybe 5, 10, then 30 seconds, maybe a minute behind, probably live. But yeah. I was pretty impressed with how well it worked. And it's worth remembering because, of course, up until the last few years, I guess, there are pretty bad problems like that, Chinese language dubbing problem a couple years ago. It has not been home runs for Apple with live streaming, but I thought this one was really pretty good.
Yeah, it was great for me too. I had no problems with it.
And it was long. So I'm glad it wasn't too distracting with like tedious technical glitches and stuff like that.
Yeah, it was long, but it felt like it was not longer than they planned. Like they had planned for 2 hours. Yep. They wrapped up around 2 hours and they had some music and kind of final stuff. But I was never at a point in the middle of it that I was bored and wishing they'd hurry up. I feel like the pacing felt pretty good.
Yeah, me too. There was only part where I got scared of being super bored was when they were going over that guilt shopping site, because it started to feel like it was going to be like Apple Music, where they're like, oh, and let's say you want to shop for like a grandmother, for example. You can also shop for grandmothers. Let me show you how.
Yeah, right. I have to say too, I did get up at several points and get snacks and drinks.
You did.
So actually, I missed.
You might have missed something. You might have missed the fact that Apple is no longer going to support RSS from any of its products.
No.
And they're shutting down developer access to everything. And you're going to have to find a new platform.
That's too bad. Well, luckily, the good news is it's the opposite of that, right? They can't stop introducing developer platforms. I can't decide yet what the biggest thing today was, but you could certainly make an argument that an app store on the Apple TV and the new TV lowercase capital OS operating system is a huge thing.
Right. Well, I did something highly unusual this time, Manton. I took notes while I was watching this thing. I'm sure I still missed something because I got bored, like I said, during some of this stuff. And there were a couple occasions where I was probably a little more interested in reading Twitter reactions to the keynote than the actual keynote. But here's what I have. High-level overview for anybody who just wants to be caught up quickly in the next 30 seconds on Core Intuition.
I dare you to do this in 30 seconds.
30 seconds. Here we go. Ready? New Apple Watch straps, new Apple Watch hardware anodizing, stuff like that. New iPad Pro, new iPad Mini 4, new Apple TV with all new user experience and an app store. New iPhones, iPhone 6S and 6S Plus, 3D touch, new camera, live photos, new iPhone upgrade program where you pay a fixed monthly fee to stay up to date every year with a new phone. iOS 9 available September 16th, and iCloud pricing is now cheaper than it was before.
Yeah, that was pretty good.
That's my notes.
You mentioned iCloud pricing, but you completely skipped over like a new stylus.
You're right. I didn't. I may have done it in 30 seconds, but I didn't get everything.
There was a lot. There was a lot there. I feel like I paid the most attention with the iPad Pro and the Apple TV, and the rest was also great. And I watched it, but I feel like those were really, really big.
Well, here's what was really notably missing, and we started this podcast primarily as Mac developers. And then gradually over the years, you became more, at least over, certain of those years, more of an iOS developer. I have remained mostly a Mac developer. This is such a non-Mac event. It's not even funny.
Yeah, it's true. The only real mention of the Mac was that it would support live photos.
Oh, is that what they said? The only other notable sort of joke reference to it was showing the September 30th release date in an email that Craig Federighi was reading on his iPhone.
Okay.
So I made a little quip on Twitter, which is maybe more true than I want to believe, but it's goes along the lines of Apple's new, or Apple, a recap of Apple's operating systems. You got iOS, You've got WatchOS, which we got last year. Today we get tvOS, and of course there is still devOS, which is of course OS 10. You got all the platforms, and then you've got the one OS to develop for them.
Right. It's an important one, but yeah, I didn't get much time today. And it sounds like they're not going to do another event this year, so it's not going to get a special, you know, time.
Yeah.
So WWDC was pretty much it for the Mac.
I got to say, I don't want to be one of those guys who's like clinging to a platform that increasingly doesn't matter. And depends on the year, depends on the month, depends on, you know, at WWDC a year ago, I thought Mac was getting so much attention. It kind of felt like the good old days. I don't really think Mac is dead, but I have to say, the more iPad moves in the direction of desktop computing, the more confused I get. Let's put it that way. And I'm confused on behalf of users as well. I'm confused as to when you look at an iPad Pro, for example, with a built-in keyboard case, I'm confused more than ever how to answer the question, you know, whether to get an iPad Pro or a MacBook. They're getting kind of uncomfortably similar to each other to me.
Mm-hmm.
They're uncomfortably similar for being platforms from the same company that can't run any of the same software. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah, that is a great point. And you joke about DevOS, but that's really the main reason I have a Mac that I use all the time, is for development. Like if I was a writer full time,
mm-hmm.
I'm not sure that I would be using macOS as much as I do now. Maybe I still would. Maybe I would use it just as much. But there are certain things that I think are just fine on iOS. And I use iOS throughout the day, off and on, but I can never do my core work development except on macOS.
Yeah, I mean, I have to accept how much of an unconventional user I am. I, for instance, don't want to really even like browse the web on an iPad because for me, browsing the web is... I feel slowed down by the touch interface. Maybe that's just old habits die hard, but I don't know. I haven't clicked with the iPad lifestyle. And part of that is probably, you know, I got I'm an atypical user. I got things like scripts I want to run. On the other hand, I just actually blogged about this recently. I run into these things on iOS where I'm like, where Siri basically saves the day. And I think, why the heck don't I have this Siri on Mac? And Mac is starting to feel like a very specialized computing platform in some ways, like a specialized computing platform, whereas it used to be pretty clear that it had all of the power and iOS had this sort of a couple special magic things like extreme portability and touch interface. Now it's starting to feel like, well, wait a minute. There's nothing intrinsically about Siri. Why don't I get Siri on the Mac? You know, like these are great features. Why don't I get reminders on the Mac, let alone Siri? Like, I mean, I have reminders, I guess. Is there a reminders app? There is. Yeah, I have to ask myself, is there a reminders app? And I use it, but I can't say, hey, Mac, remind me to take out the trash.
It's just that iOS is so much more popular, right? Apple has to put most of their engineering resources to that. I'm sure they would love to do more equal parity between the platforms, but if they have limited resources and they have to pick one, iOS gets the good stuff for the most part.
You would think that, and then they go and launch all new platforms.
Yeah.
I mean, granted, they leverage the work that has already gone into iOS, but for example, WatchOS and tvOS are examples of Apple saying we can afford to take focus away from iOS per se. And I guess I just don't know what to think anymore. Not that I ever really knew what to think like reliably 100% for the long run, but this event today, it's not all roses to me. I'm sure it's all roses to Federico Vittici, right, who's been all in on iPad for at least a year, maybe 2 years, and seems to me like the direction his use cases go, something like the iPad Pro is like totally golden.
Yeah.
Like it's like, yeah, make the iPad more and more powerful.
Well, and our, and with the iPad Pro, the iPad does surpass the Mac in a few areas. I mean, the big one is the stylus. The you can, I mean, you can't have that experience really just quite like that on the Mac. I mean, we've had tablets for a long time. We've had touch sensitive screens. I have a whole bunch of iOS styluses here. I have some Mac stuff. In some ways, some of them maybe even are technically superior, like this new stylus I have for the iPhone from Wacom has tons of pressure sensitivity, and it's, you know, it's technically maybe it's even better, but none of those things in the past have had the integration that the stylus for the iPad Pro is going to have. So it, yeah, if you're an artist, I mean, that jumps forward more than a Mac right now.
And the, I mean, the thing is, the Mac is kind of, or at least the MacBook, you know, is kind of like increasingly this mobile platform that is hamstrung by the fact that the screen only opens so much and it's only operable in a very specific configuration. I mean, just look at how it feels to use a MacBook on a plane versus using an iPad. They have so many and increasingly the same high level features. And now I think with the like keyboard available directly from Apple, I don't know, it's starting to blow my mind a little bit. And, you know, Rich Siegel, our friend from Bare Bones and longtime Mac developer, I'm sure Rich Siegel still uses his Mac a lot. I'm sure he's a lot more like me in that respect. And he tweets today during the event, quote, OS X running on ARM within 2 years. You heard it here first, unquote. Well, I'll put aside the fact that people have been saying this for years and years and years, so didn't exactly hear it from you first, Rich. But I like the specific prediction resonates with me as a reaction to the iPad Pro and its specs, because they were emphasizing in the event how the iPad Pro's CPU is like, you know, 70% faster than the previous iteration. GPU is like 90% faster. And a sort of a comparison, a metaphor for this came to mind just as we were talking, Manton, which is, you know, I'm fascinated about like Netflix and how Netflix has sort of like become this powerhouse from starting from DVD rentals on online through the mail. And now they're like a major Hollywood studio. And there's that quote. I need to figure out how to attribute it because I like the quote so much. But it said basically, Netflix is becoming HBO faster than HBO is becoming Netflix. I think that was, or that's like the goal for Netflix. And here's my comparison. The iPad is becoming Mac faster than the Mac is becoming iPad. And where does that lead in 2 years? Taking Rich Siegel's timeline. The other thought that came to mind reading Rich's tweet was what are the arguments against Apple using an ARM processor for the Mac today? And I think that two that spring to mind immediately for me are performance and the ability to run Windows apps. And what direction has world interest in running Windows apps been taking? What's the trend line? Right. And what's the trend line for world interest in running iOS apps? And then it occurred to me, is there a point on those graphs where the interest for running iOS apps on a desktop class machine is greater than the interest in running Windows apps? And at some point, is it more valuable to Apple that a MacBook Pro can run every iOS app that's ever been released than it is for it to be able to run every Windows app?
We're already past that.
Yeah.
Most people do not care about running Windows apps on their Mac. That's not a feature. The Apple could remove that tomorrow and they would have no change in sales whatsoever. I don't know if technically they can remove it, but you know what I mean? If it like stopped working,
I think it's still kind of a big deal, at least to some
not
people.
Not compared to – that's small percentage of people that need to do that.
Well, not compared to is a tricky one here, because the total number of all Mac sales, period, is a small percentage of Apple's customers as well. Mm-hmm. So there's something kind of built into this like market for Macs that's kind of specialized and compared to iOS devices.
I don't know. I just don't think anyone cares about that anymore. That was a really huge deal with the switch to Intel. It was like a feature. Yeah. Now no one cares. Like I was at the coffee shop this morning, and as usual, there's Macs, and then someone had a PC, and I thought, I remember I was walking by and was thinking to myself, like, yeah, I see PCs at coffee shops. But I'm always surprised when I see them. Is that strange? Like, it used to be you saw someone else with a MacBook or an iBook or whatever, PowerBook, and you're like, oh, cool, you know, he's one of us. Like, now it's like you see someone with a PC and you're like, what's wrong with it? Why is this person? It's strange, right? I think we've reached a point where running Windows apps is just not an issue anymore.
I don't know, man.
The only thing that really comes to mind is when my son has a game that is only on Windows that he wants to run.
Yeah,
that,
that's huge.
That's a thing, but it's not. It seems like a small thing to me.
And there's a lot of people who still need to run it for specialized like accounting software. There's a lot of people who have to do it for weird because they're weird, like. Corporate VPN only runs on Windows. I mean, I agree. That's kind of my point. Is it the trend line is downwards? But don't you think VMware is still a pretty successful? VMware Fusion is still a pretty successful product for the Mac.
It's a successful product on the Mac. It may be more successful than it's ever been, just because the market is bigger now. But when I think about the big picture, including everything Apple talked about today. That's a very small fringe. It's just not that big. I just don't think that's a big market. I don't think that's a big deal. I think when you're talking, I mean, the way you frame this was, when is running iOS apps on the Mac more important than running Windows? And I don't know if we'll ever get there exactly in terms of iOS apps running on the Mac or some kind of convergence between the OSs. But I to answer your question, I really think we've passed that point already.
Yeah.
iOS is so huge. And Windows is such a non-issue for the mainstream.
Here's the difference, though. I don't think most people who have a Mac today, they aren't clamoring for a solution to run iOS apps because they also have an iPad or they also have an iPhone. And so there's something about, I think, the ability to run Windows software that is sort of still a unique distinguishing value for the Mac, but I don't know. I just have this sense that at some point, obviously, Manton, from my tone of voice, I'm kind of bummed. I think about this, and I don't know if I can trust my sort of gut feeling right now because, to be honest with you, I'm hoping and still confident that the Mac is a strong, long-lived. Platform for the future, but it all comes down to whether how much this sort of like iPad Pro actually sort of telegraphs where Apple's going. And at some point, more iPad becomes like Mac, the more software will be uniquely available to it that people value and that people love and that provides the ability to achieve great things and build powerful stuff and doesn't exist on the Mac. And then the risk there is the more that they make the iPad into a desirable desktop, as they keep saying, they say desktop class performance environment, the more they run the risk to leave Mac owners out in the cold without the ability to run that software. Mm-hmm. Of course, Apple has the ability at any moment that they choose to release some kind of user-facing ability to run iOS apps on the Mac. I mean,
sure. We've had the simulator for one thing.
Right.
The simulator
is a proof of concept, right?
Yeah. And so the question really is like, so this concerns you, you're a Mac developer. I still consider myself a Mac developer, even though I don't do it most of the time anymore. But it concerns you. But for Apple, I'm not sure they see a huge problem yet.
Yeah.
Because all they care about, and they care a bit more about, they care more than just this, but they want to be profitable. They want to have successful products, and they don't particularly care if one or another, you know, they're willing to shift with the times. They're willing to, the iPod is a great example. That was huge for them. They were willing to let it go and say, no, now the iPhone is our big bestseller. And with the watch and the Apple TV, who knows? Maybe they'll be willing to let those become huge at the expense of the iPhone. Doesn't seem likely, but who knows, right? Everyone has a TV.
Here, I'm actually not concerned as much as a developer as I am as a user, because I still love my Mac.
Yeah.
I'm willing and able to jump to iOS as a developer. If that's where all the development's going to go take place, and if all my users want to jump to iOS, that's been the big if, actually. If all my users jumped to iOS, 7 years ago, I'd be a full-time iOS developer right now.
Well, that's the thing, is it's slow. Like, this transition is so slow, you can't see it happening. And I think Apple maybe has accepted that. And everyone wants to say, like, okay, is the Mac going away? Or is there going to be some convergence or something? I think Apple is content to say, let's just let these products play out. And maybe we're slowly making the iPad more powerful, but we don't really know how this is going to be in 5 years. If it goes that way and replaces desktop computers, you know, traditional computers, Macs, fine. But they don't really, they're comfortable with this sort of slow transition and slow evolution. They don't maybe need to predict exactly where things are going to go.
Here's the other thing I think that got me thinking about this during the keynote. Of course, the fact that there's an all new, albeit derivative of iOS, there's an all new OS, TV OS, an all new App Store category. And they made a point of saying, of course, these apps for Apple TV will be universal with, or can be universal for iPhone and iPad. Here's one more platform now. We've got iOS, we've got iPhones, we got iPads, we got Apple Watches, we've got now iPad Pro, we've got tvOS. All of these platforms can be addressed by a developer using Xcode, building a single deliverable, and the only platform that's open to developers from Apple that cannot be addressed using one of those universal binaries is the Mac.
Yeah.
And it's I'm saying this sort of I'm thinking it through out loud, sort of as a developer, sort of as a user. I already get some customer support confusion, obviously. Anybody who makes software for the Mac and iOS, or who makes, I shouldn't even say and iOS, anybody who makes software for the Mac has experienced customer support that reflects customer confusion about the idea that their iOS software for some reason isn't working or doesn't appear on their Mac. Apple making this sort of stance that software from the App Store should be universal and run on all of its devices already has implications for users when it comes to the Mac. And it's just going to get worse and worse the more platforms, quote-unquote platforms, they add, and the more that they encourage this universal app format, and the more confusing the distinction gets between the Mac and their other platforms. Why, if I buy an app for an iPad Pro, which has a keyboard, let's say, and, you know, why can't I run that on my Mac? First of all, it's not even possible. But, I mean, why isn't it possible? Because Apple has not set up the ecosystem that way. It really... when it was just iPhone and Mac, it seemed much more reasonable to say, let's just see how these platforms play out. It's starting to feel more and more like Apple is building an all app store, ARM-based iOS derivative app, you know, a whole lineup, a whole range, a whole spectrum of devices that run that software.
Mm-hmm.
And it's harder and harder to see how the Mac fits into that in the long run.
Right. You got 3 out of 4 platforms that look fairly similar.
Yeah.
That you have the Mac. And it would be great to see some parts from UIKit over to the Mac, even if you couldn't just run iPhone apps. There's so many things in UIKit that are just better designed than AppKit.
Yep.
And AppKit has really improved a lot. And they've done a pretty good job lately of incorporating ideas back from UIKit, things they've learned, but still making them feel like the Mac. Like the new collection view, I think, is a great example of that. Learned from iOS, but still make it feel like the Mac. But yeah, there's so many things that it's a different platform still. And so when we first started recording, I mentioned this, I'm not sure if you've seen this yet, Daniel. When we first started recording, literally the event had just wrapped up. The new developer docs for all the new stuff weren't out yet. While we were recording, I was poking around. They are out. The tvOS is part UIKit, or at least a form of UIKit, is there for building native apps. They also have, thinking about just platforms and similarities, they have a new thing, right? TVML, Apple TV Markup Language. So there's another kind of way to have specialized apps on the Apple TV. But some form of UIKit is there. There's example code and docs and everything. And, you know, maybe it's like the watch where they've got to make, diversions and differences and stuff. But it still feels like those three platforms are much more similar to each other than the Mac.
Yep. And I don't know. Developer.apple.com/Mac was down today during the...
Oh, no. You have to type it /Mac OS. Not yet. Just kidding.
No. Hey, and on a brighter note, developer.apple.com/Mac does have an all new OS 10 El Capitan seed today, the GM seed.
Well, that's good.
Because they want to make sure that the developer OS is ready to support all these other platforms. Yeah. Oh, Manson, I need a hug. No,
I'm sorry. I wish I could virtually. So here's the last thing I'll say when you're thinking about this from your perspective and from what we talked about, like what's the iPad good at? I think the iPad is good at a lot of things. It's not good at coding, but it's good at a lot of things. Browsing the web, I think, is one of them. You said you don't really use it for that, but I think browsing the web, it's good for that. Just earlier this week, I redesigned the riverfold.com homepage, and you know, it's a responsive design and stuff, but I kind of made some mistakes. My wife, who uses the iPad, said, oh, you know, on the iPad it's just a little off, so I could adjust the CSS, tweak it a little bit, but in general it's a really good browsing experience, especially the way people build web apps these days. It scales well from the phone to the iPad. The other thing it's really good at, though, I think, is writing, even without this keyboard, but especially with it. I think writing, browsing, watching videos, it's good at that stuff. And so when we think about our products, we think about your product, a blogging app, a writing app, at some point, you know, it makes sense to embrace your apps on a platform that is well-suited for that type of app, right? I mean, some people have Mac apps that just are not well-suited to the iPad and the iPhone at all. But those of us that do, I don't know, it just makes sense to incorporate that as part of what you offer.
Yeah.
It's a long way of me saying, why isn't Mars Edit on the iPad yet?
Oh, boy.
I'm sorry. I'm not making this better, am I? I just made this a lot worse.
No, it's good.
Okay, this week we're happy to have Twitter and Fabric and Crashlytics and whatever you want to call this suite of developer tools. We're happy to have them back sponsoring the podcast. I'm a longtime Crashlytics user in my iPhone apps, and they've really been improving things lately. I mentioned on a previous show the new events for Crashlytics Answers. So it was always just a great snapshot into the activity in your app, how many active users you have, how many crash-free users you have. And now you can also trigger custom events. So you can track, you know, how many people are signing in, how many people are posting content, how many people are reading some section of your app. It's a great way to kind of see what's going on in your app, in addition to just crashes, but just activity, because a lot of times you put your app out into the world, you think you know how people are going to use it, until you actually collect some data, you're never quite sure, and you might be surprised. Maybe you'll find out through customer support what people are having problems with and what features people really like, but a lot of people won't write in, so it's great to have kind of a peek inside how people are using your app. I've been using the Fabric Suite for a long time. Again, they offer the crash reporting, the beta testing, the analytics, the answers product I just mentioned. Also, as part of the suite, Digits. If you need authentication in your app and you want someone to be able to quickly verify just over SMS, check that out. And MoPub. If you need ads in your app, they offer that as well.
Yeah, Manton, this is amazing to think how far our beloved Crashlytics has come since they started sponsoring the show years ago. And now, of course, now it's part of Twitter, as you've discussed. And there's so much stuff to talk about with Twitter and their proposition for developers. They actually have their own developers conference. It's called Flight. You can learn more about this at twitterflight.com. You can request a ticket. They just have a little form there. If you can be in San Francisco or you're going to be there anyway, it's something to consider, especially if you are already already invested in Twitter's developer tools or you want to learn more about them. This thing has gotten kind of crazy, Manton. First of all, it's being held in the very same auditorium that Apple's special event today that we've been discussing on the show was held, the Bill Graham Civic Auditorium in San Francisco. It's on Wednesday, October 21st, 2015, and it's a multi-track event. They got like the main hall session. They got a whole mobile track, whole track just for dealing with data, and then something called the Lightning Theater, which I have to imagine is lightning talks, those short but very often very informative talks, keep your attention riveted on lots of different stuff. They're taking another cue from Apple on their schedule for the main hall. They've got, first of all, a session called A Week in the Life of a Fabric Developer, then Growing and Monetizing Your App Using Twitter, and then they've got three sessions in a row that are all called Secret Session. So who knows? Maybe Twitter's going to get some of that surprise announcement mojo out of the Bill Graham Civic Auditorium as well. We really want to thank Twitter for continuing to support Core Intuition. Please go check out their stuff at fabric.io. And of course, as I mentioned, you can learn more about their conference coming in October at twitterflight.com. Okay, Manton, I noticed earlier you were alluding to, you mentioned when I did my famous 30-second roundup of the Apple event, I did gloss over the Apple stylus, as you said. But I think it's worth noting that I don't think anybody from Apple today said the word stylus. The Apple Pencil. It's not a stylus.
I don't know. That's a good question.
This is the technicality that allows them to defy the great ones' forbiddance of a stylus.
I'll need to check the transcript. You may be right.
Well, in any case, man, that stylus sure looks good.
It looks great. And unfortunately, the name, I feel bad for 53.
Yeah.
The great folks up in New York City that make the app Paper, and they have a stylus called the Pencil. I have one. It's a bummer for them that the name has now been reclaimed by Apple. But the stylus, the Pencil, the new Pencil, the Apple Pencil, I mean, it looks great. It's $100. I assume it will only work with the iPad Pro. I would love if it worked on all the iPads.
Didn't 53 also have trouble? I don't want to go on too big of a sidetrack here, but they had trouble too with Paper because Facebook took Paper.
Yep.
And I think it came down to like, you can't like trademark a real obvious word like paper.
Well, yeah.
And
I mean,
and I don't think you can trademark a real obvious word like pencil either.
So I am not a trademark lawyer. I think you can maybe in some cases have some kind of trademark for a very specific market.
Yeah.
And with a stylus, obviously, the market is exactly the same. I mean, yep, there's no argument there. I have no idea how the trademarks work. I mean, I said I feel bad for them. But on the other hand, it was their choice to name something with the most simple possible name you could have. I mean, I would never name a product that, right? And it's cool. I mean, I like the name Paper. I like the name Pencil. It works for them. Yeah. It works for their brand. But you're asking for some problems when you try to make a product that is that simple of a name.
Yeah. Well, so Apple, I think a recurring theme for me during the event today was to be repeatedly amazed and impressed by just how much they're executing on in the past year or more, you know, the time that they've spent on all these various projects, but just how much parallel development culminated today in the announcement of many, many impressive hardware projects. You know, like you look at like some of these features, the Apple Pencil, it works in like conjunction with the iPad Pro to like give like higher resolution when it's being used. It's like all these little nuances, and it's like this device itself, it just looks like an amazing hardware device. Obviously, you know, new iPhones look amazing with their what they call it now, 3D touch. It's like the new hotness name for force touch.
Yeah, you know, when I saw that, I thought Quick Look. It's like Quick Look for iOS, and it looks fantastic.
Right? Yeah, mm-hmm. It does look great. And my first thought was, oh, wow, app extensions are really, they're really taking, I think it must be all the same app extension functionality. They're really running with that.
Could be, yeah.
The other thing, I mean, well, let's just take hats off for the continually improving iPhone camera, which is insane and continues to become more and more insane. Yep. Tons to talk about there. Maybe we should put that off for another time. The other sort of like, I think so far maybe we don't understand how significant it is. Hardware device is not the Apple TV, but the remote for the Apple TV. Because they were showing, you know, as sort of anticipated, they were showing the touchpad has a little touch pad for you know, flicking and scanning and stuff. And then it's also you know, aware of its space, of its motion. It's motion sensitive, so you can use it to do stuff like a lot of us would associate with the Wii remote, right?
Yeah, it looks great. It looks much better than I imagined in my head when someone described, you know, the rumors described what it would do. They were correct, but I didn't imagine it would look this great. You can tell they spent a lot of time polishing this thing. It looks good. The buttons, even forgetting about the swipey touchscreen part, the buttons look significantly better than the old Apple TV remote. So I'm looking forward to getting this. I assumed I would get the new one, but I wasn't totally sure. I'm definitely going to get one of these. I think it's a huge leap forward for the platform, and you know, it is a platform now.
Now, did they announce in my copious notes? I don't know if I actually have a TV release date. Did they announce that?
So they said, I believe, October, and developers, they mentioned this briefly, and I didn't quite understand what they meant, that developers could start testing in September. I think I have that right. It may be a month off or some weeks off, but what it turns out, you know, as we've been recording, we looked, and you can register for a developer kit where, if you're picked, assuming it's some kind of lottery thing, they send you the new Apple TV ahead of schedule so that you can not just test in the simulator or whatever thing they're going to have for Apple TV development in Xcode. You can actually plug it into your TV and it's like a real Apple TV, and you can do stuff, because you can't test these apps on an old Apple TV, right? Not to mention the OS is old. You need the new remote. I mean, it's not powerful enough, et cetera. So I put my name in the hat for this. I don't know how the lottery or how this is going to be picked, but I like that they've done this. And this is, as far as I can tell, this is the first time they've released a product early to developers, maybe since the Intel Mac. Honestly, that's the only other time I can think of them doing this.
That's a great point. I was comparing it, of course, to the Apple Watch, because it's using the same, presumably a similar lottery style submission system.
But that was after the Apple Watch came out. That was not ahead of time. Yeah. So you did that developer lottery thing for the Apple Watch. I had already had my Apple Watch from just the regular store.
You're right. Absolutely. Yeah. It was just like the consolation prize for those of us who didn't wake up at 3 a.m.
This is great, because if you look at the Apple Watch launch, I mean, I think it went pretty well. But what were the complaints? Well, the apps were slow, and no one had a real watch to test on. And I guess you could say the same thing about the iPad introduction, but iPad is a brand new platform, but it's still really similar to the iPhone. This feels like something completely new, where you really need the hardware ahead of time.
Yeah. I got to tell you something, Manton. I signed up for this developer kit too, and I'm looking at the materials about the whole process. There's a couple interesting things here, I think, pertinent to just kind of the interest in how Apple conducts its sales of constrained things. So like we remember at WWDC, there's that big hoo-ha about people who were selected by the raffle or whatever, the lottery, but then their card was denied or something, right? Mm-hmm. This is a very weird little nuance. Look at the fine print. Not even the fine print. Just look at the print at all. And it says, if you are selected, this is for the Apple TV developer kit. If selected, you'll be charged $1 US or in local currency during the checkout process to verify your billing and shipping address. I notice now it doesn't say anywhere how much we're actually going to pay for this thing.
Yeah, I don't know. $1,000. Yeah, I mean, you can imagine that you'd pay either nothing or $150.
Did they announce the price?
Yeah, it's $150 for the base, yeah, and then $200 for the you know, more memory or more flash storage model. Right. So thinking back to the Intel, what I mentioned,
those were like loaners.
They were either loaners or they were super cheap. Like you would pay, yeah, it was like you're paying for parts or something. You know what I mean? It's like you get a bare bones Mac that has an Intel,
yeah,
in it, and you're paying, but not much at all.
It's funny you say bare bones because I only used the Intel test machines at one location, and it was at Bare Bones Software.
Okay,
so they were gracious enough to let me test something.
Nice.
I think that these will probably be pay list price. But I think it's kind of funny and speaks to both of our excitement and eagerness to get our hands on these that we just clicked okay. And there's not even without looking for the price, but Apple's not actually disclosing the price. They do say, it's a little confusing. It says the Apple TV developer kit is non-refundable. So that definitely implies we're paying for it. Limited to one per development team. If selected, the billing address of your credit card used to complete your purchase will be used as your shipping address. You'll be charged $1, blah, blah, blah. That's just to verify your billing and shipping address. And then I guess the implication here is your item will ship within 1 to 3 days. And then I think the implication is you'll be charged when it ships. But it doesn't say that.
Yeah.
And it doesn't say how much you'll be charged.
So strange oversight. Seems like they would have mentioned that.
$1,000.
Yeah. I mean, it can't be more than $150, so
no.
I don't really care exactly how much it is, because I'll probably get one of these anyway.
Yeah, definitely. Sign me up. I mean, I will be annoyed if it somehow ends up being... I don't think they could charge more than the list price, but...
Yeah, they can't. That would be crazy. That would be like the most developer-hostile, worst thing that they ever did.
I have to say I am excited about this Apple TV, so maybe my mood is turning around. Maybe I'll just stop being a Mac developer and I'll skip iPads and iPhones and go straight to Apple TV.
We talk a lot on the show, though, about that. It's like usually we say something like, these opportunities for a brand new platform don't come around very often. So if you jump on, you might get featured by Apple. Turns out,
yep,
we've had two completely brand new platforms in the last year. So,
yeah.
But this is probably it for a while. So seriously, this, if you've been looking to jump into a new Apple platform, this is a pretty good time to get on board.
Absolutely. Well, definitely lots of for us to think about, Manton. Given the end of this announcement today, now that you are Manton Reese, Riverfold Software, you focus on what you want, when you want, and, well, what will get you paid. But coming out of this event, what is your number one priority? Has it changed since before the event? Is your number two priority different now?
That's a great question. I think my number one priority is still to ship the things that I had in progress over the last couple of weeks. And I have something new to announce on that maybe next week, something I'm really excited about.
Okay. Ooh.
But...
Android support.
Oh, no, no. But when I think about the fact that I need to do some consulting in addition to my apps, I mean, that's where I would say something like this plays in. You know, so you know, I mentioned I was kind of updating the Riverfold website to reflect that and mention some stuff about consulting. And maybe I'll throw in something about Apple TV development too. I don't know. That's where I see some of these new platforms having a role in that I could help people build this kind of stuff mm-hmm. because yeah. in the last hour I've become a complete expert on Apple TV development. but my big priorities haven't changed much. I know what I need to do. I have some stuff to announce soon. Just need to see that stuff through.
Sounds good. Well, I think we are probably on the same page. I'm going to keep, darn it, Manton, I'm going to keep shipping Mac software.
Good for you. Good.
I'm turned around. My optimism is back. You know, it's a pretty good reject operating system.
It's great. The great thing is the Mac and the market for Mac apps is better than ever. That's the great thing. And also yeah. the other great thing is the flip side to a new platform that this is your opportunity to get on board, do it. The flip side of that is that like while everybody else is distracted with the new platform, you can move quickly on the old boring platform, you know, and ship apps. So I think either way you look at the stuff, there's a good silver lining to it.
I like your attitude, Manton, and I'm going to try to have an attitude more like that going forward. And in the meantime, I want to thank our sponsors, Fabric from Twitter, of course, providing great developer tools for mobile developers. Learn more about them at fabric.io. Of course, folks, if you love this show, and I know you must because you're still listening and we're getting close to the end here, please think about going to the Apple iTunes podcast directory, leaving us a review. And if you're looking for a new job or just want to tell your boss a great place to list the listing for your new coworker, check out jobs.coreint.org.
Great. Good talking to you this week. Thanks, everyone, for listening to the show.